Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, April the 18th, 2017. I currently have 7:02 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. First thing tonight we have to do is our pledge and then invocation. Our pledge is going to be led by my new friend Ethan, one of our scouts, and then Councilmember Geddes will lead us in an invocation. So Ethan, if you want to come forward, please.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ethan. Excellent job.
Our Father in heaven, as we begin this City Council meeting this evening, we wish to thank thee for this beautiful country that we live in, and especially for this great city that we reside in. We're grateful for the freedoms that we enjoy, the opportunity to gather and to meet. We ask at this time that we would ask for thy spirit to be with us, that there would be a spirit of peace and understanding as we discuss the matters that are before us today. These things we pray for in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. All right. Next item is to approve the meeting's agenda. Someone has had a chance to look at the agenda and like to make a motion to approve it as is or make amendments if they feel necessary. I'll take that motion now.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
Okay. I have a motion to accept the agenda as is. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Seconded, I think, by Mr. Geddes. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments. The public comment sheet I picked up did not have any new signatures. Did someone sign in and not express that yet? Looks like Dad's with Scouts tonight. So, okay. All right. Then I'm going to close the public comments part of the section and move on to our reports, presentations, and recognition. So we are honored tonight to have a couple of our representatives, Representative Mike Kennedy, who we know well, and Senator Dan Hemmert. Having concluded our legislative session fairly recently, we wanted to invite you both here to give us an update on some of the bills that were passed that may have impact on Cedar Hills. We know some of them. I'm going to start with Representative Kennedy, and then when you're done, Senator Hemmert. And then how about if we take questions after the two of you have finished? Okay, Representative.
Thank you, Mayor. It's a pleasure to be here with you today, and I hope I didn't just break your microphone, but it's easier for me to hold them than stoop over. Save my back some troubles. I appreciate your service. Sorry? Do I have to record this? We're supposed to record every word we ever say for posterity and such, so I don't know if you need that, but I'll...
Can you hear me okay? So it's a pleasure to serve, and I appreciate your service. We all are volunteer sort of servants. We have day jobs and mostly do those, but I serve for 45 days in the state legislature. I've done that now for 5 years, and had a chance to come and visit with you for each legislative session afterwards. It was a pleasure to do that. The budget is a $16.2 billion budget. It used to be, when I started, a $13 billion budget. It's interesting to watch that budget every year go up. And odd as it is, when we have surplus, which we did have surplus this year, we always seem to spend every dime. It's allocated one place or another. So all that money's been spent. And it's one of those things that tax reform was one of the key things that was discussed, and nothing was done on that, but the aspects of that reflect the fact that we continue to have money come in, but our needs outstrip the money that comes in, and so tax reform is something that we continue to talk about, and I think you'll see more of that in the upcoming sessions as time progresses. Frankly, I think it's a better idea to defer any tax reform before the state should not do that before the federal government does that. It sounds like this year we may have some federal changes as tax reform. But you probably did hear a bit about the food tax. I think that's an interesting interesting policy question, but for me in general, I have to be very hard-pressed before I don't see a tax increase, and particularly something as regressive as a food tax. I think food tax has a lot of concern for me about the policy basis. So the budget was passed, which I think is one of the most important things we do in that 45-day session. I would say that something that wasn't done that I think this body is interested in has to do with what I think the county commissioners came and talked to you about fairly recently, it was an hour or so ago, as to the Murdoch Connector in the east-west corridor across the Government Center.
They actually talked about Canyon Road, a totally different issue. But you're right that the connector road from Highland is very important to us.
Right. It is to us. And I feel like I've got an excellent partner you're going to hear from in just a minute, Senator Hammer. He and I are united in doing this in a productive and useful way. The reality is there are multiple parties that have a stake in the Development Center property and how it's used not just now but 100 years from now. And as to what we do with that property, it's something that this has been in the works for 10 to 20 years. I'm on board for the past three. We continue to try to build collaborative processes and bring all the parties on board. But we are committed to making sure that as all those parties are heard, that action is taken. When and how, that's still in the works. And we do have different political parties that are invested in this, but I'm grateful that I have a partner now, the former Senator Hummer, who can work with me in trying to develop consensus as we try to figure out how to get that east-west connector. You know that there's a recent study done, and I presume you're all familiar with the study. Yeah. I'm familiar with the executive summary. Frank Miller studied the whole study associated with that, but it's quite clear that we need a connection now, and 2040 rolls around and maybe can actually get more. So that's something definitely that I'm working on and working as well. Council members, Apollo talked to me about short-term rentals and the aspects of that, policy considerations. I'll just tell you as city council, I appreciate your contribution during the session. Daniel did talk to me about his concerns about, Representative Notwell had a proposal to restrict your ability, the city council's ability, to restrict short-term rentals in your area. Airbnb, as an example, one of the commercial vendors that does that, where somebody rents a portion of their home out to somebody, and the next-door neighbors are watching the hotel sort of develop right next to them. As I appreciated council members Apollo's contribution to that, I did end up voting in favor of that, and it's one of those city councils do have a struggle of when do we restrict liberty to use my property as I prefer to use it versus when do we leave these people alone. So that was an interesting conversation. I guess I would say generally I need to hear from you. Councilmember Crowley has also been in touch about certain convention states and constitutional amendments as well. And I'd invite all of you to be in touch with them if you have issues that are interesting or important to you through the legislative session. I'd do better with more information. And I don't know if you have any particular questions about the short-term rental conversation, but essentially it became a component of personal liberty and an opportunity to use my property as I see fit, says the individual that owns the property, versus the opportunity of a city council or other political subdivision to restrict that, right? So I voted in favor of the individual rather than the city council, which I'll take criticism for that as well.
My understanding is the bill was updated, though.
It was amended.
The version I was originally talking to was much more restrictive of what city councils could do.
Good point, and I appreciate that thought because things do change along the way. So I voted for the final product. In fact, there's only one vote in the House against, and no votes in the Senate against. So it's one of those apparently compromised to the point where it's palatable to the League of Cities and Towns, as well as I didn't hear any more from you after our conversation. But it's a general reflection that I'd love to hear from people that I can trust, and I appreciate your contributions. I'll take any questions later on, but with that, I'll turn it over to Senator Hummer, and we'll hear from you.
Senator, come on up.
Thank you. I'm going to stand next to the mic, too, if that's okay.
Speak loud.
It feels like I'm in church. I'm going to apologize up front. I smell like gasoline. I was cut too close on my way here, ran out of gas, and the only gas canisters they sell are way too childproof for me, apparently, and I spilled gas on my hands. So that's my explanation. I agree with everything that Representative Kennedy said, and one thing I did want to touch on So one thing that didn't happen that he brought up was the east-west connector. As mentioned, this has been a multi-decade process, so as always, I've started cautioning myself in what I say. To expect it to change overnight probably is not realistic. That said, we are united and we are pushing to as much as we can to get something there. The steps that need to occur, though, in that process, from the legislature's perspective, is a recommendation from the board of the Utah State Development Center. They are meeting in May. We both encourage people to do this when we presented to Highland City, and I'm encouraging anyone here to do it as well, to reach out to those board directors in a respectful manner and encourage them to control the process by making that affirmative recommendation one way or the other. It is going to take that recommendation to get the legislature to take action to authorize the sale of the land that would then allow for the development of the road. So that's one thing I would add. Anything you can do as a city to encourage residents to reach out to those board members again and encourage them to make that recommendation, I think would be helpful.
Could I just ask a question? If they deny that, the board denies, you know, and it says we want it, we like the way it is, we keep it the way it is, and cut it off. Does the legislature have any appetite for a combination?
I would rather cross that bridge if we get to it. I've heard a lot of history there, and I knew this, and I don't want to throw any organization or any person under the bus. I've heard there's been kind of this, it's just been a process.
Yeah.
And yes, in theory, the legislature could pass a resolution that authorized the sale of the land. That's state action, it's state land.
Right.
But it's going to take, and we've talked about this, I think it would take a degree of inaction that's pretty excessive in order to get the legislature on board with that. It's just, it's going to be hard to push it through.
So at least my informal circle of people and influence, I would say it's a 99% unanimous decision that needs to happen.
Yeah.
Sooner than later.
Well, and I think one major roadblock we've had that we've heard about is this traffic study. It's out now. That's not a roadblock that can be relied on anymore. I made some flippant comments, but I've come to regret in the last week when I got back to certain people when I heard about it. So I will only say that the traffic study's out, and we need to let the board meet and discuss it, which they're doing in their May board meeting, and my understanding is on the agenda. And as much as we can encourage that board to make a recommendation to put in the Murdoch connector, the smoother the waters will be. I think if they do make that, what I've been encouraging people to say, and what I've said to myself to the board members is, it's kind of what you're intimating now. You can control this or be controlled by it. If you want to control it, make the recommendation, because at some point there will be just so much frustration that potentially something could happen that they would not like. And I think they sit in the power of the position of power right now, and they can retain that if they make that recommendation. So as much as you could encourage people to do that as a city, I think would be helpful.
So I want to get into the weeds a little bit, guys. So, and Representative, you can join us. So my understanding of this is that, because I've heard multiple variations of this, so I'd like, to the best of your knowledge, feedback on this, which is, I heard for years that it was the state legislature's responsibility to approve. I always knew it was the sale of land. But then a little over a year ago, a representative from the board of the developmental center came and said, the board actually has the ability to approve a road. It's the state legislature that has the responsibility for approving the sale of land. And then seems like that ran into a hurdle with the traffic study. And now the traffic study out, and I'm just concerned that a certain senator at some point is going to throw up another study. And so who actually has authority? Does the board of the developmental center have the authority to approve a road being punched over from Highland. I always knew it was the legislature regarding the sale of land, but who can approve a road coming through?
So if we're going to sell the land to, say, the county or Highland City, the legislature has to approve that transaction.
I get that part.
But as far as putting in the road, my understanding, you should just speak to this, because what you're going to say is going to be more accurate than what I was about to say.
So when Senator Dane and I proposed the board, and it used to be a council, now it's turned into a board, is that the board does have discretion to, so water rights are part of that, and also the sale of land. If there's a legislative nexus associated with that, the state legislature can do anything it wants. That is the state property, and frankly, we've already approved the master plan.
Right, I get that.
We did that 3 or 4 years ago. I remember your comments at that point.
But can the board work independently? Can the board work independently of the state legislature to approve a road, have the county build it, and connect it to North County?
I don't believe they have that authority. I'd have to confirm with the statute that we passed, but as to that, they can give us a recommendation.
That could be, and for me, that's the nexus, is that the board member told me real clearly, we have the authority to do this, and the next thing I knew, a certain senator prevented anything from happening last session, the session before that, and maybe the next session.
And I'm pretty sure Senator Dayton, in drafting that, I sponsored it on the floor of the House. The details, I have to research that for you, but she did not intend that the board autonomously, without any legislative connection, could do whatever it wants. So I don't believe that they can just go off and act.
And there's actually it's not a cease and desist letter in the legal sense of the term, but in essence, that's what it was. The city, this is just last year, earlier, the city was, Highland City was taking steps to put in the road, and a letter was issued by the legislature saying, you can't do this unless we act, and we're not going to act unless.
So the legislature assumes that they actually do have the authority then.
That's what that was.
Okay. I understand now. Thank you very much.
So my understanding, you just confirmed for me, my understanding is that the state legislature did approve the master plan.
Yeah.
And the master plan does include a road. Right.
So then the question came up was, do we need any more action from the legislature? Because my objective is not to determine a configuration for that road, nor is it to run over the board or anybody that's investment board. My intent is to get it out of our court and put it into the locals' hands, where really it should be, as to what does that road look like as far as how many lanes, how fast speed limit.
Right. So does Senator Dayton disapprove of the plan that was approved?
She actually voted for the approval of the master plan. So
okay.
Now, I'll be honest, I think there's flaws in the master plan. It's been several years since that.
Yes, I could point out a number.
Yeah.
But given that the master plan was approved, it's curious that then anybody would oppose the road since the road was in the master plan.
And then the other component of that is we've already approved that, so we went to legislative research and council in the state legislature, and they said, well, if you're going to do that road, you need additional action in the hands of the legislature to actually get that done, which is pretty frustrating for you. It's frustrating for us as well. You know, I'll also tell you up there in the House, nobody knows what I'm talking about when I talk about this road or the developmental center. And in the Senate, there's one person that cares deeply about that.
And no one else. And no one else. She doesn't know who it is.
Very few. No, it's a local issue, right?
So, we get that.
So as to that and the dynamics, it's a bunch of people up there that don't really know besides what we represent. And of course, Kay Christopherson and American Fork. I mean, other local representatives and senators care about that too. But there aren't that many people up there that have a bone to pick as to how this is going to happen.
Is there anything that we can do to help educate them and spread the word?
We passed a resolution in support of the East West Connector,
yes.
Along with American Fork and Alpine. So I think that's essentially we're building up a stack of evidentiary data that says, all right, legislature, this is what we've got. There's not any resistance on the side of the locals as to this road. And why is it we continue to stonewall this process?
So let's get in the weeds a little bit again. Tell me about your problems with the master plan. Where does it need to be tweaked?
Simply, and I think everybody probably could comment, but number one, it's dated. Number two, I don't want outright sale of any of that land. To me, that land should be revenue generation for the next 100 years. And when we sell for single-family homes, I don't understand that at all. Now, I'm not a developer, so maybe that's why I don't understand. Actually, Mike, you probably could speak a lot more to that. But as to what is the highest and best use of that land for the developmental center for those disabled individuals, I just see it as a revenue generator.
Like what? I guess that's the area where I'm...
leases or long-term rentals?
For what, though? Because... I think you know that no one is ever going to build a single family home on a lease, and in multifamily situations, I have a hard time thinking that they're going to want to do a lease for a multifamily, and I'm not sure there's enough demand to create a commercial zone that big. When Cedar Hills is...
You've already got some, and I don't know how you're filling up your space.
I have a great solution to the problem, which is we build a North County Recreation Center there with a pool and a fitness center and a library. And we lease the land and we...
There you go.
But either way, right, this isn't a developmental... I can't speak as a developer for that area, but whatever we do with that land, when it's sold outright, of course, we never have access to that.
I guess the money is still there
and it could be invested in other things.
That's
the problem is with all due respect to the other person that we're talking about, she wants this long-term revenue source for the developmental center on leases and things, which don't work. And so if you sell outright, you still have the money that then can be put in some other mechanism that so would generate long-term.
You and Rob Shelton from American Fork City Council, I let the people that know should talk and do, but the reality is 100 years from now, we're still going to have severely disabled individuals that are very expensive to take care of. And right now on our state list of disabled individuals trying to get access to state health, there's 3,400 of those people, and that's probably three times that are not accounted for. The reality is that those 100-something acres, I don't even know how many there are, but it's a lot of acres.
250 acres.
Okay, thank you for that. The reality is that's somebody's got to fund these individuals, and that property was set aside 100 years ago for that express purpose. And so
I think you're right, but
is disturbing to me, although maybe that's the highest and best use of that. I've always thought retail, but I'm not a developer. But the reality is when we sell to Fox Hollow, we never get access to that land again. And frankly, we've sold to Lone Peak. We've also sold to single-family homes. And I just say, yeah, that's why we've got this little bit of land deep in the heart of Utah County. And we've got these problems that we have right now as to East-West connectors and funding issues.
The thing that I would like you guys to consider, maybe pass along, is the idea that you've had for this land is possibly wrong. I think Mr. Geddes is 100% right when he says that the idea of leasing a big part of this is not realistic. And so I don't have a big problem with the master plan. I think that it's mainly single-family homes. There is some multifamily homes and a small part commercial. And the reason it's that is because that's what the demographics of this area dictate, is that I've done a lot of talking with developers about retail in this area. I don't see how it's possible, even remotely possible, to create a huge retail area there.
Point well taken, and the debate right now is not what to do with that land. We're just trying to get a road. So this is a great debate, and it's a good discussion. And I'm not going to say I'm the authority on the matter, but I would say our objective is unified. We need, for public health, safety, and welfare, we need an east-west connection across that road, across that property.
On that part, you and I completely agree.
We can get to the details.
And that really doesn't even affect it. I mean, they can throw it in first, and then you still have the same uses, potentially.
I think the ideal scenario is you get it out of the legislature and put it in the hands of the board and let them...
I think that would be a great idea. But if the hurdle is the idea that they need to sell the land before they can create a road, and they're only going to sell the land if it can actually not be a sale but a lease, that isn't going to happen. There's way too many problems with that. And so I wish that we could isolate the land sale issue or lease from the road. Put the road through, get that done.
We're all aligned on that.
We're talking about the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, as to the rest, that's worthy of debate and discussion.
It is. Okay.
Any other questions from council?
I do have a question or some comments non-related to the road. I looked at your voting records, at least for the grassroots group. I don't know if you guys have heard of them. I know you probably have.
Yeah, we hear of them. They're extremely conservative.
Very conservative.
I think it's one guy, maybe another guy, so it's pretty limited. But,
right.
Yeah.
So I looked at that. Basically, what I feel is that a lot of people run for office and say, hey, I'm going to be conservative. I'm for lower taxes, less government, decreasing the size and scope of federal and state and local governments. And sometimes it's really, you get a lot of pressure to vote. You know, a senator or a representative has spent a lot of time on a bill and they're gathering support, and there's a lot of peer pressure to vote for things, and I understand that. And I think in the end you have to look at and say, what did you do as far as, did you vote for more government or less government overall? And so the report card from them puts Mike, you at 67% voting for less government, and that's really high, actually, because they're very conservative. You know, I would say they're wrong sometimes too, because you could get government down to bare bones, and it's not going to perform some of its important functions. So, but what I did is I looked at a few that some other representatives voted for or against that were more in line with the grassroots that you voted the other way. And there were a few like reducing the driver's license, the age that you had to wear a helmet if you're increasing the age that you had to wear a helmet to 21. That's increasing a little bit of government oversight. Creating a bunch of committees, local food advisory committees, air quality policy advisory board, things like that. But overall, 67%, the average for the House is 40% on the conservative index by grassroots. So I thought that was really good. Plus, the most important thing to me was not to threaten the Constitution with HTR 03, and you both voted against that, and I appreciate that. But Senator Himmer got a 30% overall from this group. And the Senate averaged 32%, which puts you a little more liberal than the average in the Senate, according to these issues. You know, it's just a handful of issues, so I can't say it's overall. You know, it's just a handful they picked that they felt like increased the size of government the most. And even the most conservative Senator Dayton got a 71%. So, you know, that's 100% to me, is the 71%. But in any case, I just want you guys to be aware that This is one of the only reports I know that really says whether you voted to increase the size and scope of government, and those are the reports that we're given. So
can I speak to that for a minute?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I learned after the first week there that there are 1,000 scorecards, mm-hmm. and if I was going to manage my voting to a scorecard, I was going to not be a good legislator. And so I don't manage to a scorecard, and I never will. And if that's going to be important to you, I'm not going to be a good legislator for you. That said, one thing that's missing, I think, we passed a bill this year that I was the Senate sponsor of. It was a regulatory large regulatory review and revamp across the state. It's the largest regulatory change that's been passed in the state of Utah for decades. What we did was we created a new measure, if you will, to any bill that asks, does this bill increase or decrease government? Does it increase or decrease regulation? And that, you know, passed the House with high marks, passed the Senate with high marks. That took a lot of work.
Good.
And I'm going to put that bill up against all 1,000 other bills that whoever that dude is decided meant conservatism. And I'm never going to let someone else define what to me is conservatism.
Right.
And I do think I'm a conservative, and I do think I'm a good Republican.
Right.
And again, if people are going to throw scorecards at me, I'm going to say, I don't care. I don't buy them.
Well, and I looked through them, and most of them were increases in you know, creating more government agencies and programs, and committees that have oversight that may or may not be very useful, I think, you know, to me personally, day to day, it just spends more taxes. So I agree with most of their assessments personally. But anyway. Oh, and one thing to note is there was 535 bills passed, a new record, which just seems like, well, I don't know how you guys wade through all that. Hats off to you for trying to keep up with all the bills that not only passed but didn't pass. So anyway, appreciate what you guys do.
So. I will spill on that too.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Rob.
Yep.
Any other questions, comments?
Yeah, I want to say, first of all, that I appreciate the amount of time and effort you put into this job. And I've only reached out to Representative Kennedy a few times. I haven't to Senator Hemmert, but you're always very responsive. And I appreciate that you take the time to listen to a different perspective. One thing from my perspective is I'm always a little bit concerned when I'll tell you, I'm more of a moderate Republican. I'm always concerned that when I hear from state legislators say things like, I'm choosing the individual over the city council, because for a city, especially for a city of our size, we're the most local government control you can get. And so we represent the individuals who voted for us on the city level. And I appreciate that Councilmember Zappala reached out to you on the short-term rentals, because we were hearing from people who were very concerned about Airbnb and how it impacts their neighborhood. And I think those are great conversations for cities to have on how they're going to handle the concerns, not just of the property owner, but the people who live around the property owner. And so I think that there are too many times where I hear state officials really push back against the federal government and say, local control is important and you shouldn't be in our business, but then turn around and tell cities exactly what they can and can't do. And so I hope that you will appreciate that if local control really is important to you, that at the city level, we're representing our community and their concerns, just our city and our concerns, and how local control matters there as well, as much as it does at the state level.
May I address that?
Yes.
I appreciate the comment, and first just be in touch, because I actually, Daniel, I don't even know if you like the final product, but apparently it changed enough that was acceptable, and I didn't hear from you at the end, so I guess it was okay. But interestingly, the state's made the federal government, and the state's also made the county and the city governments too. And so as to who's in charge of what, and this is the balance, and I fully agree with, we all want local control until we want to control the locals. That's kind of what we say up there, and it's a joke, but at the same point, I'm not interested in getting in your business and telling you how to do things unless there's a very significant issue. And personal property rights is one of those that's in the Declaration of Independence, so it's foundational. So that's the only reason I said that. Otherwise, a good example is this road. Let's make sure that the locals determine the configuration and get it out of the legislature's purview. So I appreciate that. Be in touch if there are issues, but I'd also say I am trying to keep out, unless I absolutely have to, out of your responsibilities, which I respect that you do.
And so do you believe in that you will work with ULCT, because obviously they're representing municipalities, and so I appreciate that you're willing to hear from them. And
in the end, I don't think as to this bill, I don't think they had any concern.
No, I think at the end, the amendments that were made were fair.
So, I'm fairly certain that you don't believe in personal property rights to the point that you would nullify any and all zoning ordinances that cities write. And so,
citizens are great.
When you're saying you voted purely for personal property rights, I think from having talked to you quite a bit about this issue, that you're not completely dismissing the right of cities and the right of neighbors to control impacts on their property and to have zoning ordinances, right? So there's always a balance there. And the bill that came out in the end was much more preferable to the bill that originally was there. And it didn't nearly tie your hands as much. I mean, I might still disagree with it, but it got rid of 80% of my concerns.
And one thing there too is legal city. There's loud voice up there, but also the earlier, if you do have issues, that people get involved, the better. You know, Rob mentioned 535 bills passed. Another number though is a bill that get to the floor and receive a floor vote. 98% of bills receive an affirmative vote on the floor. So just to put that in context, there's between 30 and 66 is probably, it's a handful of bills that are making up that target. So that's the problem with those stats, those scorecards.
they just aren't good stats. But regardless, if a bill is on the floor, frankly, 98% of the time, it's too late. It's going to pass. You can both vote no. It's going to pass. Where bills get modified is in committee before they get to the floor, in between the two houses, floor votes. And so the earlier you get involved and the more proactively you get involved, the better as far as affecting the outcome of that legislation.
Yeah, I completely agree. I reached out to Senator Henderson about her bill on food trucks, and I actually got some language changed in the bill as a result. She was very responsive.
Yeah.
And a medium for that is twice during the session, we meet down at American Fork Hospital where you and I met and had a chat on Saturday morning, free breakfast plus press us with any questions you have in vivo as this thing's unfolding. So I know you're busy and you've got a lot to do, but send a scout troop to come and ask us a question. That'd be fine. They've got nothing better to do, right, Scout? I'm just kidding. You've got a lot to do, too. But twice during the session, we'd love to have you down there, and now we'll hear from us, but also hear back.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you both being here.
Your legislative policy updates, by the way, that you both did were very helpful as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for the time. Appreciate
Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate you being here. Let's move on. We have a public hearing. And this is for the conditional use permit for Marco's Pizza down in our commercial zone. Has anyone come to speak for the public, the public hearing on Marco's Pizza? No? Okay, close that, move on to our consent agenda. And it looks like I have two meetings minutes, the March 7th, 2017, and March 7th, 2017 work session and city council meeting. So if someone would like to make a motion on our consent agenda, I'll take that.
I've got a concern on the consent agenda, and maybe it's okay, but I just want to find out. So I wasn't able to attend the March 7th meeting, and there was a discussion about the Highland Gardens issue with the water connector. I sent an email saying, please read this during this discussion because I wasn't here. Did that get read? Do you know?
I thought it did. I
thought it did.
Okay. It wasn't put in the minutes, and I wasn't here, so I just.
I seem to remember it being read.
Maybe that could be put in the minutes. Something regarding that. I had a comment there too.
Not a bad idea.
Is that all right?
Okay. So, are you satisfied?
Make a motion.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda with the change that we add my comments that I sent over. Just
okay.
a brief on that. Not the complete comments, but just a summary of it. So.
Good. So. He is satisfied. Does someone like to make a motion?
That was my motion.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second your motion.
Motion has been seconded by Mr. Zappala. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to city reports and business. We're going to start from my left and go all the way down the road and then finish up with me. So, Chandler.
Yeah. We have a number of programs that are starting as we're nearing the summer. We've got our soccer starting this weekend, and Tot Soccer as well starts this week. We're also starting a coaches pitch program as well as a t-ball program, and so far we've seen really great support for those programs, and our numbers are looking good. Additionally, we have a golf camp that registrations are currently open for. It's a two-week-long camp in June, taught by Denise Larson, who's a resident of Cedar Hills and also a former coach at UVU. We had a window break this week. You might notice on the Vista Room on the east side by an errant golf ball. We're currently working with the golfer and various insurance companies to get that fixed. We expect a two-week turnaround on that. We have a soils and plants class this week. Look for info on the Cedar Hills website. And Saturday morning at the roundabout on 4600 West and Cedar Hills Drive, we have the final portion of our service project. You might notice that there's been a lot of activity down there, removing the existing landscaping, bringing in some topsoil, and the final portion will be to plant some new vegetation there on that roundabout, and it should look very nice. We really appreciate the work done by Boyd Wilkins and Robin Finch and her husband that have donated a lot of hard work and even equipment to make that happen. And finally, we have actually two more things. We have a big thank you to Stephanie Martinez, Emily Cox, and Nicole Allen for pulling off the teen Easter egg hunt and the kids Easter egg hunt last week. They both were very successful events. We had a lot of people at them, and we look forward to working with Stephanie going forward with the YCC. And we thank Emily and Nicole for the work that they've done as well. And then the last thing, good news to report, the Cedar Hills staff applied for a community development block grant this past month, and we've been awarded $30,000 to do an ADA replacement project throughout Cedar Hills and Heritage Park. So we'll look for those funds to come in and start those projects as well, hopefully this summer. Thank you.
Thank you. Mrs. Race, anything?
Just that family festival is less than 2 months away, and we need a lot of volunteers. So I'm hoping that everybody on the council will sign up to volunteer for at least one thing outside of the dinner. And then if you know about other people who are interested in helping, please send them my way.
Mr. Geddes.
Yes, so this last week, I actually attended my first Utah League of City and Towns conference on St. George. And I thought it was very worth it, actually. I learned a lot. More than I expected. I didn't have expectation. I didn't know what my expectations were, but went with open mind, and it was. I thought it was very worthwhile. So,
excellent. I always enjoy those too. Anything else?
Okay.
Mr. Bailey.
Nothing for me.
Mr. Zappala.
We had our State of the City published. That's it.
Okay. Mr. Crawley.
Yeah, just reporting on the Planning Commission meeting that we had. Sent an email out to the council regarding it, but I'll just briefly touch on it. So the Moore family has 3 acres of land and wanted a conditional use permit to operate a bed and breakfast in their home and to operate a wedding reception venue. And the Planning Commission approved the conditional use permit with a few conditions. And one of those is the City Council strike the wording that requires that the property be a historical venue. So that will be coming to City Council, I assume, coming up. So anyway, that's it.
Okay, thank you very much. There's Lone Peak Public Safety meeting this Thursday. I'll report back on that. Imagine that Cheryl is organizing our next Finance Committee meeting. So those of you that want to show up, it may be your last opportunity to come to a Finance Committee meeting in this budget session. So,
am I on that committee yet?
There is not a committee, so that's why.
The board, I mean.
And
the Lone Peak.
What's that, Chairman?
The Lone Peak.
Oh, the Lone Peak meeting, yes. I thought you meant Finance Committee. Yes, so you are supposed to be there on Thursday.
Okay.
7 a.m.
7 where?
Highland, over in their city offices.
In like upstairs where we meet?
No.
Highland City offices.
Highland City offices. And, 7 a.m. And we start promptly at 7. Usually done by about 8:30-ish. All right. That is it for business. Courtney, I wonder if you'd come down and join me.
Where?
Right here. Come down with me. Mm-hmm. So Courtney's been with our city since 2004 as our transcriber. And I appreciate all the work that you've done on this. And so I've always tried to promise early meetings with you, and I haven't always succeeded, but that's been my endeavor. So it has been a real pleasure to work with you, and we appreciate all the work that you've done for us. So this is a small token of our appreciation for you. So Courtney is not going to be our transcriber anymore. She's got more important things probably in her life that's going on. So, a small gift token and flowers. So there, those are kind of heavy. But again, thank you so much. All right, let's move on now to scheduled items. First item is a review action item on Marco's Pizza, which we just had a public hearing for. Chandler, if you want to come forward on this.
Mayor and Council, we have received an application for Marco's Pizza to be located in the SC1 commercial zone next to the Great Clips that's down there in the AmSource development. According to our code, a CUP is required for commercial uses in the SC1 zone to be approved by the City Council with a public hearing. The proposal involves no changes to the exterior facade of the building, only some minor changes to accommodate their business style and model in interior. Marco's Pizza is a delivery carryout. It's not a dine-in restaurant, but it is a pizza place, and based on our limited research, they have good reviews, so we're excited about them coming into Cedar Hills. So, like I said, there's no external changes to the property. The staff is working with Marcos Pizza on their application and their permits. So are there any questions on their there's no real documentation here because there's no changes to the site plan. So that's why you don't have any real supporting documents. But I was hoping if there are any questions, we can maybe address those concerns.
I know I asked this already, but didn't we change in the conditional use table that that restaurants were just a permitted use?
It's not clearly listed. No.
Interesting.
So it just says permit. It just says commercial uses in the SC1 zone, and it says the council is the approving body and it requires a public hearing. Now, this I know this isn't part of this discussion as part of this approval, but as a staff, we want to make things easy on people coming to the city. We want to make the city an attractive place for development. We understand that residents and developers build cities, and staff, we work for them. And so when we get an application like this and we see what could be an obnoxious hurdle for them, where there's a building that has been set aside for a retail type use, as a staff, we think that we should amend our code in order to have this approval be done in administratively in staff.
Where there's so Chandler, we did.
But it's, I wrote we need this to code. Spell it out
clear. No, it's very clear. It has a table with retail, mixed use, and office, the different subzones, and then it has permitted versus conditional, and it, under restaurants, 5810 is permitted. Conditional is drive through and fast food
and
restaurants.
And we're looking, but then look at the CUP code. Look at 10537.
Did that not get updated?
They don't correlate very well. So in order to cover our bases, it does say any commercial use requires a public hearing in the city council.
We maybe need to amend that.
So this is where, this is where I'm going with this, because that was I know that was not our intention, but that's why I say we have this hurdle here that I see it as an unnecessary hurdle.
Mm-hmm.
We need to amend this to say if there is no exterior changes to a retail use, if they're not doing anything on the exterior facade of the building, this should be done internally in staff and to facilitate their process and to expedite it as
can
well.
Can you give me the section of code again?
10537.
10537.
I think if I recall, Chandler,
I'm going to take a look.
We had this discussion that the reason we left restaurants the way we did is because we said, well, what happens if a restaurant, increased the traffic or the parking and stuff like that? I thought that was one of the reasons why we left restaurants.
We have separate ordinances for that in the code that we wrote.
That's why we did mark it as permitted instead of conditional.
Yeah.
So these just need to agree a little bit better.
I mean, I like taking it out and just
if it's I think that if it's an existing building, it should just be done
absolutely
internally and as fast as we can. But given the application that we have before us, it does require an approval from the city council.
So I would recommend somebody make a motion for me.
I move that we approve a conditional use permit for Marcos Pizza.
Okay, I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Geddes seconds. Any further discussion?
One point of discussion. So the only thing I looked through in code that I thought could remotely be an issue is trash. We have a section of the code that says it needs to be in a dumpster and it needs to be enclosed. I think we already have that done.
It's already done on site. It's in a closed dumpster.
Can I ask a quick question, too?
Sure.
Who is going to be the franchisee? Or is it a Cedar Hills resident or is it from somewhere else?
I don't know.
It doesn't really matter to this process. I'm just curious.
I don't know. I've talked to him who it is. But
they're from Holiday, Utah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So I have a motion and a second. We've had some discussion. Any further discussion? If not, we're going to have a vote. Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Double aye.
Thank you. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Okay. Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Let's move on to item number 10, also an action item on the City Code Title III related to business licensing. Mr. Goodwin.
Yeah. So just about everything we're talking about tonight is about making it easy to do business in Cedar Hills. So this item is related to Senate Bill 81. It's too bad our representatives left because I'd love to pick their brain on this one. But the bill itself was included in your packet, and the language I want to focus on is on the third page of that packet. It says a municipality, and it's underlined. But it's the new language that's added. It says a municipality may not require a license or permit for a business that is operated only occasionally and by an individual who is under 18 years of age. There's one provision.
Chandler, what line are you reading?
Line 162.
132?
Yeah.
132.
Okay. Oh, yeah, and also 162.
So it says, I mean, there's two provisions here. A is a municipality may not, and there's two provisions, require a license or permit for a business that is operated only occasionally and by an individual who is under 18 years of age. So there's one provision we need to address.
That's your lemonade stands.
Right? That's your lemonade stands and summer lawn mowing businesses. These are, you know, we don't encourage these people to do these types of things, so this is pretty straightforward. It's the next one that's a little bit trickier. It says, charge a license fee for a home-based business unless the combined off-site impact of the home-based business and the primary residential use materially exceeds the off-site impact of the primary residential use alone. So if the business has an off-site impact, not an on-site impact, it's off-site, keep that in mind. And also one thing to keep in mind, because there's a lot of key words here, materially. It can have a greater effect, but it has to be a material. In an audit, Rob, you know this, when you have a material finding, it's not just pennies and dollars, it's thousands of dollars, it's hundreds of dollars. There's a material impact. So that's what we're looking for. The problem with the bill is that it doesn't define material. So it's left up to the local jurisdiction.
That's not a problem. That's good.
That's not a problem. So, but we've bounced ideas around quite a bit on this. So as I'm looking at our current business licenses, letting me go through them real fast. I'm going to go over four different categories, excluding commercial enterprises in the commercial zone. We have home offices, and we have about 165 of those. We have home businesses. We have about 28 of those. We have rental licenses, which are non-owner-occupied rental units. We have about 180 of those. And then finally, we have food trucks, approximately 25 of those. Home offices and home businesses are the two elements that are most at play here. And in your proposed code, we have definitions for both. We're added definitions for both of them. Let me read those. A home-based office is a business conducted entirely out of the home where the public and or employees do not enter the home, where there is nothing produced and where there is not a material impact. So these people that wake up in the morning, go downstairs, turn on their computer, remotely work on their computer, turn it off at 5 o'clock and go eat family dinner, no license required. There's no city involvement on these. So the city has, like I said, 165 of these. Roughly generates about $10,300 in business license fees to the city, which we've been planning already in our budget documents, in our budgeting process to not have this come in.
So people have just been paying because they thought they had to?
No, they've had to in the past.
Oh, okay.
Going forward, these people are not going to be required to have a license if they meet that home-based office. A home-based business we've defined or proposing to define as a business conducted entirely out of the home. The public and or employees may enter the home, so that's one difference. Goods may be produced, and there may be a material impact. And then we defined a material offsite impact, as an impact that a residential home-based business has that exceeds the impact of a residential home alone, taking the language from the bill itself. The impact may be based on traffic, noise, lighting, odor, or utility services. And that language, those examples come from a training that the state, or that Utah League of Cities and Towns did. No, sorry, it was the Local Governments Trust did with the Property Rights Ombudsman explaining the bill. So, like I said, staff's bounced this around quite a bit. Sought feedback from our attorney, from looking at what other cities have done, and there's not very many. There's, I think every city's kind of scrambling on what to do here. But we want to err, on the side of the resident here. So what we're proposing is that home offices, the 165 that we have in the city, do not require, if you meet a home office, you are no longer required to have a business license. You don't need to come to the city for anything. For home businesses, you do need a license. If there's not a material impact, there's no fee for that business. So as I'm going through our list here, I have a list of, this is our list of all of our home businesses, right? There's about, like I said, there's about 28 of them. And most of them, a lot of them are salons, home-based salons, where one person comes in at a time,
They get their hair cut and they leave. There's not really an off-site impact if one person comes to your home at a time. You know, I don't see that as being a material impact on the neighborhood. However, there are people entering the home. When people enter the home of a business, there's a reasonable presumption that the home that they're entering in is a safe home. So we're still going to require and charge them for a light for an inspection, and that's $25. And that's to ensure that if there's any chemicals, if there's hazardous materials, fire extinguishers, forms of egress, that these types of things, that they're being met. Because I believe that when a person goes into a residence on a business-type purpose, there should be a reasonable expectation of safety in that environment.
Is that yearly?
Yes, yearly. The ones I've highlighted here, and there's eight, these are the ones I can quickly identify that quite possibly have a material impact. These are your preschools, your dance studios, gymnastics studios. These are the places where, you know, 10, 15 cars might pull up in front of a home at 12 o'clock, drop our kids off, and then come back at 3 o'clock to pick their kids up. There's a material impact on the neighborhood in that case. So these people would be required to have a license, and also they would have to pay for a business license because they'd have to go through the administration process of ensuring compliance with background checks, and there's still some staff work. Everybody else on this list, if there's not a material impact, staff's proposing that they still need a license, but there's no fee for the license. And that meets the requirements of the bill where it says that, let me read it. Says a municipality may not charge a license fee for a home-based business unless the combined offset off-site impact of the home-based business and primary residential use materially exceeds the off-site impact of the primary residential use alone. So I know that's kind of tedious language, but we're trying to make the home-based business Cedar Hills has a lot of entrepreneurs in the community, and we want to continue to encourage that, and I think that this bill does. I think it gets the city out of people's homes where, you know, maybe it really doesn't have a whole lot of impact or no impact. And in the cases where it does have impact, it allows the city to still kind of monitor that and make sure ensure safety. So with that being said, are there questions? I'm sure there are.
I have questions. So on somebody, let's say they have an Etsy shop. So they don't ever have somebody come to their house to purchase something, but they may be producing something in their home and then going to the post office and shipping it off or whatever. In an instance like that, they qualify under the home-based business because they're producing something more than four times a year.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not really an impact because no one's coming. There aren't any customers coming and going. So you're saying in a situation like that, they would have to have a license, but they wouldn't have to pay for it.
Correct.
So do we need to define that or spell that out a little bit in our code so people understand when and when they will and won't be assessed an actual fee?
We're trying. And one thing I'm actually going to recommend is, like I said, we've been working on this for a while, and there's not a whole lot of guidance to go off of. And this is kind of where we landed yesterday afternoon. And so we tried to quickly draft the code here, add some language in to address that. But I'm actually going to ask you guys to table this tonight in order to clearly address exactly that. In this case, if you go back to 3.3-1-7 in the proposed code, that's a requirement, and it's...
What page is that on?
Shoot, I don't even know.
3-1-7?
3-1-7.
Okay.
And that first paragraph discusses inspections. The current language says an inspection shall be required when the general public or a non-resident employee will be entering the business, a product is produced, and or when chemicals are located at the business.
Page 16.
We're proposing that that language read, an inspection may be required when the general public or a non-resident employee will be entering the business. So once again, if there's still someone entering your home, there's an inspection required. A product is produced. We're saying let's strike that out, because there's a difference between somebody loading bullets and selling them versus somebody selling Etsy stuff.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, a lady making quilts and sending them.
Yeah.
So we're saying the product is produced may not be a very good threshold, but we are concerned about hazardous chemicals and materials are located at the business.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
With regards to that, I think we're heading in the right direction, honestly. I think there's... You just looked at it for a short time, and I think you've really hit it where it needs to be. But
yeah.
Are home-based businesses required to have ADA access? Is that ever an issue?
That's a good point.
I don't think they are.
I don't think that they are. I really don't think that they are. Because that they're not, a commercial business does, but I don't believe that a home-based business does.
I mean, even providing service like to a hair salon.
David would.
I don't think so, but it depends on the age of the building as well. If the primary purpose is residential, and there's a home-based business as an ancillary to that, then okay, I think that's where the exemption comes in. But there is an age component. If it's a residential building that is later updated or converted into a full-time, full-fledged commercial business, it depends on the timing of the upgrade of the business. And I forget which year it was, but I think it was 1996. If your upgrades are post-96, they have to be ADA compliant. If it's pre-96, then they don't until they upgrade again. I could be wrong on that year. It's been a while since I've looked at that. I think that's where the differential comes in.
Just because I don't think we address ADA at all.
No.
Yeah.
All right.
Fine.
That's a good question.
Okay. Very good. Let's have a motion.
I motion that we table this item.
I second it.
Motion's been seconded. Any further discussion?
One very small thing. In 314D6, you just have a typo.
314D6.
D6. Very, very last. It says a home-based offices.
Okay. 341D6. Let me find it.
Okay. No more discussion? You don't have any more questions, Dan? Very good. So I have a motion to approve. It's been seconded. We've had some discussion, so let's have a vote. Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Last item is I need a motion to go into a closed session pursuant to Utah State Codes 52-4-204 and 52-4-205 I and D and E.
I motion that we go into closed session pursuant to Utah State Codes 52-4-204 and 52-4-205 1D and E to discuss the purchase, exchange, or lease of real property and to discuss the sale of real property.
You need to say where we're located.
In Cedar Hills.
Exeter.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Motion was seconded by Mr. Bailey. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Mr. Mayor, it's a roll call vote.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. I will excuse everyone that does not need to be here. Okay. We're back in regular session, ladies and gentlemen. And I need a motion now to adjourn our city council meeting. That was our last item.
I move that we adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn. Is there a second?
I second.
Motion has been seconded by Mr. Zappala. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. We are adjourned.